Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
All right, this is episode 43 of the Senate floor. Can you believe that we've done 43 episodes of this already?
Can you believe we're only 7 away from 50?
I know, it's insane. 50 episodes of the Senate floor. That's pretty big for a bi-weekly podcast. And we're only growing, especially with new additions to the network like Lee Hutchison.
Yes, if you caught the show last week, so the plan now is that in the off weeks when Tristan and I aren't bringing you the Senate floor main show, Lee Hutchison and I will be bringing you what we now call the filibuster, which is a little bit like the Senate floor, except we're going to touch on topics that either A, Tristan isn't interested in, or B, we might touch on a specific film or thing in a franchise and go into more depth than we do here in the Senate floor.
Yeah, like we love to do movie reviews and lists and retrospectives and everything like that. Like this week, we're doing a Rocky retrospective, so we're going to talk about what we think about all of the shows. But if this was a filibuster Senate floor episode, you guys might talk about, you know, how Adrian's relationship impacted Rocky's success or something like that.
Right. Or we could talk about, you know, we're going to talk about all the movies in the franchise today. You know, or on the filibuster, we could talk about just Creed and how it was made and how and all the stuff that went into it. So that's the kind of difference that you'll be getting between the normal Senate floor and a filibuster.
So you're going to be getting Senate floor every single week, and you will not have to change subscriptions or change RSS feeds or anything like that. It's all coming to you through the Senate floor. So if you're subscribed to this channel already, you will automatically get Senate floor filibuster.
Absolutely. And Tristan, I mean, it's only been a few weeks since we've announced that the Nerd Party was expanding as a network. And, you know, Lee's very happy that we seem to be getting good feedback from our Deadpool review and our recent show on Star Trek and its future. But your new show has also been doing quite well. And I'm sure your wife is very, very happy, so why don't you reiterate how that's been going for the listeners?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked. And everyone, we, as you know, the Nerd Party is now a network. We have 3 shows, and we've expanded on our original show, The Senate Floor, which is now called The Senate Floor, of course. And Nerd Nuptial has been gaining a lot of momentum. We have a lot of listens and downloads for a new show. I was very, very surprised that we have as many listens as we do and that we got as many reviews as we have gotten. And it actually bumped us up to the new and noteworthy list. And Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that is now a part of the Nerd Party Network, they also got on the new and noteworthy list. And they're also up for some Star Wars Podcasting Awards. So everyone should go to StarWarsPodcastAwards.com and vote for them. And it's really great how much momentum we're getting. And the girl is loving it. She is adapting to it far greater and faster than I ever thought that she would. And I 100% believe that the reason why we're doing so well and that we're getting so much fan mail and reviews is solely because of her.
It has nothing to do with you.
No, I really don't. I mean, yeah, I think we have great chemistry. Obviously, I'd hope so because we're married. But yeah, the latest review that we got was someone saying, "I'm here for the girl. I'm her fangirl." And that was like, the girl was just like, "Oh man, I've never had a fangirl before. This is amazing."
Well, you know, it sounds like she got bit by the podcasting bug, because like I remember you telling me that she was initially reluctant to do it, and now you're telling me she's the one telling you when you're doing shows.
Oh yeah, she's the boss. Like she's the one who's just like, "We're gonna podcast about this. We're gonna podcast about this." I was like, "Well, let's give it a couple days. Let's digest the material." And she's like, "No, we're going to do it right now." And that's what we did with House of Cards season 4. As you know, House of Cards was released on Friday, and we finished Saturday late afternoon, early evening.
Yes,
on our 13 episode watch.
I'm well aware, because for those of you who don't follow Tristan was a big old girl and had to leave Twitter for the whole day just so that he didn't see a House of Cards spoiler.
Oh man, I hold that sacred. I wanted nothing. I deleted Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr and Facebook, the Pages app, from my phone, and did not go on it during work whatsoever.
That's a little bit of paranoia.
No, it's not paranoia. It's safety. That's what it is. It's safety. And I didn't get spoiled. So, you know, mission successful or mission accomplished, as most people say. But it was great. We podcasted like 15 minutes after we were done with the episode. And we used my mobile recorder so that we could do it just straight away. And we did it live to tape. So everyone, please go to, if you're a House of Cards fan and you've seen season 4, seriously, don't listen to it if you haven't watched all of season 4, because it's very spoiler filled. Go to Nerd Nuptial and give it a listen, and we think that you'll like it. So you can just go to thenerdparty.com and find all of our shows there, whether it's this show, Aggressive Negotiations, or Nerd Nuptial.
Yeah. Things are going very well. I couldn't be happier, and I think we're only going to expand more and more. But let's get on to what we're going to talk about today, Tristan.
Absolutely. So today, as I mentioned before, we're doing a complete Rocky retrospective, and that's 7 movies. And that's a lot of movies to get through to do a retrospective, because I think the only other time that we tackled a retrospective this large would be with our Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Retrospective, which was, you know, right at the beginning of the show.
Our second show, yeah.
Yeah, it was our second show. And then I think the next biggest one was Star Wars, because, you know, you have 6 ones in there. But right. This one now has 7. No, now Star Wars has 7, but this was before The Force Awakens. And yeah, so this is going to be huge. So we're going to have to be fast.
Yeah. So, you know, hence why the filibuster was created, because we get to go through these quickly on here the show and more in depth on that show. But that's neither here nor there. So let's go all the way back. I guess, you know, the beginning is a very good place to start. It's 2016 now, so the first Rocky was 40 years ago in 1976.
This was before Star Wars. This was in 1976. Rocky, Sylvester Stallone. While I was in film school, this movie was heralded as one of the greatest from my professor. Like, he absolutely loved this movie, and he talked about how Sylvester wrote this over a weekend. He wrote Rocky from beginning to end over a weekend, and very little changed from when he submitted it to the studio and when it was filmed. And that's just mind-blowing when you think about it, is that he just sat down at a typewriter, wrote it out over 48 hours to 3 days, and it just is stellar movie. So I'd love to talk to you about, when do you remember the first time you watched Rocky?
It had to be when I was like in fifth grade, because you know, do you remember, and they still kind of do this, but back in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, whenever they didn't have like a big programming block, it was either like TBS, TNT, or USA would just like run all the 5, because it was only 5 movies back at that point. They would run like all 5 movies just in a block as a marathon. So I think that's how I saw the first one. And then I know for sure that it was during fifth grade, because when I graduated fifth grade and I graduated elementary school, this should be kind of mind-blowing. The Rocky movies were kind of the first VHS set of films that I ever bought, bought for me as my, like, you know, you're finished with elementary school present.
That's really cool that you got them at such a young age, because I, normally this is reversed. I didn't watch them until after college, until after I graduated. And it was when I was living in Chinatown, and I was living with a whole bunch of other, you know, film school nerds, and, you know, all of us were trying to get by. And there was one guy in particular who loved Rocky. Like, he constantly talked about Rocky, and it was his favorite movie. And he wanted to be a director, and he wanted to make movies as powerful as Rocky. And I told him I'd never actually seen it before. I've just, you know, obviously I know about the stories because it's such a huge part of our culture, but I never really sat down and watched it from beginning to end. And he said, he's like, this is going to happen. This is what you're going to do. And so over the course of a weekend, we watched all 6 movies, because by then Rocky Balboa was out, and I fell in love with them immediately. I was like, why on earth did I wait this long to watch them?
Yeah. I'm surprised you waited that long. I mean, yeah, there's still some classics I haven't seen, but this was one of the early ones for me. Like, this made me love older filmmaking.
Now, with Rocky, did you fall in love right away, or did it take some time to build up some steam for you? Like, did you not fall in love until Rocky II, or was it love at first sight?
It was kind of love at first sight. I couldn't say that I understood all the dramatic stuff that was going on, because it's mostly a drama movie. But, mm-hmm. You know, the fighting stuff I loved when I was 10, 11 years old. So, I say I got pretty into it from just a visceral standpoint, and then as I got older, appreciated the story more.
It's really funny. I love boxing movies. I hate boxing.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I can't stand watching boxing on TV. It's more boring than baseball to me. But boxing movies, just they film it in such a way that makes it interesting instead of just two guys hugging each other whenever they get tired. You know, like, it's actually exciting.
Oh, I completely agree. I never watch boxing in real life, but I love it in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. So now with this first one, you know, as we stated, it was in 76. And as we all know, I'm such a, you know, we're both film nerds, and I'm very much a technical film nerd as well. And this was the first movie to use a Steadicam.
Was it really? I did not know that.
Yes, absolutely. Steadicam is now a cornerstone of the filmmaking utility belt. It's very common today. And, you know, for those of you who don't know what a Steadicam is, if you watch one of Matt and I's favorite movies, Aliens, the chest guns that they have that are, like, connected to their chest and their waist and everything like that, that was based off of a Steadicam. That gun was based off of Steadicam. So just imagine somebody holding a camera instead of a gun, and that's what a Steadicam looks like.
Right.
And Oh, go ahead.
That's got to be difficult, because at least I would imagine back in the 70s, the cameras are a lot bigger than they are today. So, like, you're hauling around a big ass camera.
Yeah, well, it all depends, because today you can have big cameras and small cameras, and back then you were most likely to have a big camera, but it depends on your budget, because you might be using 16mm or something like that. But yeah, a Steadicam is basically it's a harness with an arm connected from your waist, and it takes the pressure off of your back, and it very much looks like an arm, like, where, you know, like a shoulder that goes down to an elbow that comes up to a wrist, and then there's a pole where on top is the camera and on the bottom is a counterweight, and so you can move it up and down, side to side, and it looks very smooth. And that's the only reason why the shot of him going up the stairs and, you know, like in Philadelphia, and him jumping up and down with his arms in the air, that's the only reason why that shot is possible, is because of a Steadicam.
And thank goodness, because that shot pretty much has become the icon of the whole film.
There's actually a shot where you can see the Steadicam operator in the last fight scene. You can see him walking around with a Steadicam in the movie. Right. And it's really, really funny. I can't remember exactly where it is, but look for it. You'll see it. And the guy who invented the Steadicam was the Steadicam operator. I cannot for the life of me remember his name. I feel bad. But yeah, he changed the industry. This movie changed the industry in multiple ways.
Yeah, it did. And I don't know if anyone 40 years later needs a synopsis of the film, but basically you have this, you know, underdog lightweight boxer, Rocky Balboa, who's, you know, a boxer by night and a mob enforcer by day. Is given a shot at the heavyweight title of the world by the current champion that happens to be Apollo Creed, played by Carl Weathers. Mm-hmm. So the whole film is about him getting ready for this match, training with one of the best characters in the franchise, Mickey, played by Burgess Meredith, the Penguin from the original Batman series. There's your connection there. And, you know, all the while falling in love with his friend Polly's sister, Adrian, played by Talia Shire, who's a Coppola, right? Because she's in all the Godfather films. This was not her first Oscar winner film.
Yeah, she's related to the Coppolas,
right? And so, you know, that's basically the film. And at the end of the movie, he fights Apollo, and no one thinks he can stand a chance, and he ends up not winning, but going the full 15 rounds.
Yeah, it's so great that at the end, I mean, this was in the 70s. You know, the 70s was a very different time for America, and it was a lot of people. There are certain people out there who don't like 70s movies, and those people are wrong, because they feel like it was much more sardonic and pessimistic, and, you know, like it just there was this wave of negativity if you look at the 70s movies. But some of the best films of all time have come out of the 70s. And with Rocky, you know, like everyone expected him to, you know, to win at the end because that's what happens at the end of movies. Mm-hmm. But because we're in that time, they turn it on its head and they keep the positivity but still have him lose.
And yet you still feel like he wins anyway. That's the feeling that I love at the end of the first film.
He goes the distance.
Right. Right, which is great. And you're right, those people are wrong. And they don't understand that it was just a different time because, you know, 1976, we're only 1 year out of Vietnam. Vietnam, I think, ended in 1975. So country was feeling not so great about itself. And the cinema reflected that.
Absolutely. Like, we've talked about that on this show before, about how much the Vietnam War influenced, obviously, the country. I mean, that goes without saying. But, you know, it's a war that was going on for 20 years and was just over, and it ravaged the country. And film is an art form, and art reflects life, and that's what was going on.
Right. And then, you know, that's why when you get to – this is a little off topic. That's why you get to – 77 and you get Star Wars and the blockbusters, it's like, okay, we finally have moved beyond Vietnam. We're ready to feel good about ourselves again.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. Like, Star Wars, A New Hope, but, you know, of course it was called Star Wars, you know, when it came out, gave us a new hope in filmmaking of, okay, it doesn't have to be dreary all the time. We can actually have some fun popcorn movies again.
Right. Right, and then you start getting the more optimistic films of the late 70s, you know. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, Close Encounters is pretty optimistic, and then by the time we get to the 80s, we're back to fun blockbusters.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, let's go ahead and move along, because the movie was so successful that it spawned a sequel, and this was 3 years later, when 1979, we came out with Rocky II.
Rocky II, and I didn't mention real quick, but the first one was nominated for all kinds of Academy Awards, including Sylvester Stallone, even though he didn't win. And it was nominated and won for Best Picture, along with many other things.
Yeah, one thing that I, you know, as I've mentioned before, I was an editor for many years, and this movie definitely deserved Best Film Editing. This was fantastic. This was a great job by Richard Halsey and Scott Conrad. This was a phenomenally edited film, acted film, and everything of that nature. But yeah, so Rocky II.
1979, yes.
1979. Do you want to give the people a quick synopsis?
So the film kind of picks up right after the first fight. You know, it's a continuation of Rocky's life. He gets married to Adrian at this point. They get ready to have their first child, and he's kind of dealing with the newfound fame that fighting Apollo Creed has brought him. Meanwhile, Apollo Creed is dealing with the, you know, fallout from his fight, because even though he won, a lot of people are now calling, you know, not only weakness on him, but they all felt like Rocky should have deserved that win. Mm-hmm. So that pushes him and his ego enough to challenge Rocky to a rematch. And that's basically the long and short of the film. It ends with the rematch happening, and this time Rocky does win and gets the title.
Yeah, and Creed's ego is so big that you'd think that it could fight Rocky itself in the ring.
Right.
And I love how they built that up. They show this guy who's so successful, so amazing at what he does, and he's literally the best, that he cannot handle people saying that he's not, even though he has the championship.
I mean, you see those little scenes of him, and I do like it because it tells you a lot about his character, of him just, like, his kids want to, you know, spend time with him. His wife is getting frustrated, but all he can do is keep reading the mail that comes in, the negative fan mail, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It grates on him, and I think this is a great follow-up movie. I love Rocky II. Like, when I watch Rocky I, I have to watch Rocky II. Like,
right.
I can't not continue on. Like, 3, 4, and 5, I can watch. I like them all, but I can watch those anytime. But when I watch Rocky I, I gotta watch Rocky. I gotta watch Rocky II. I feel like the whole series is one big story, but this is very much a double feature. This feels very linked to each other.
Although some people argue that the quality drop-off is pretty severe, but I don't think so. I think that it's certainly not as Oscar-worthy as the first one, but I think it's as far as sequels go, in an era that didn't bring you a lot of sequels. Successful movies back in the 70s just meant that they were successful films. It didn't necessarily guarantee that you have a sequel out in 2 years the way it does now. But the fact that they did have a sequel, and I think it was as good as it was, I think is a testament to Stallone, who not only wrote, but this is the first one he directed.
I had completely and utterly forgotten that. Yeah, I completely forgot that Stallone directed this one. Yeah,
he's going to be our director for 2, 3, and 4.
Man, I completely forgot that. Yeah, this was a lot of people argue about the quality, but I love this movie. I think it's great. I think it's a great companion to the first one. Now, because of that, because it's a great companion, it doesn't really stand on its own that well.
Well, this is very much a sequel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not. There are certain sequels out there that are very much self-contained stories, and you don't need to see the first one to appreciate the second one. Very few and far between, but they're out there. This one definitely, is carried on by the first one, and I think that bothered certain people. But you and I are big, fans of serialized storytelling. So this was great for me.
And, it wasn't a thing back then, and they didn't have VHS readily available. I mean, now that this is all on, some form of media, whether it be DVD or streaming, and you could just watch them back to back, that problem's not there anymore.
Right, right. And this, they had to make him win at the end of this one. There was no other way to end it.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciated what they did in the first film quite a lot, but you would have felt that it was straying far too close to the original if the same thing happened. So, yes, they do have him win. And actually, the fight itself, I do like the fight in the first one. I think the rematch is actually a better fight. It's a more exciting fight. Even though you kind of know how it's going to end, you want to see how it ends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like that this wasn't just pure success for him. Like, it wasn't after Rocky won, he was, he was the richest man on the block, he was a big celebrity or anything like that. I like how in Rocky II, he fails at these endorsements.
Right.
And he fails at being a celebrity because that's not Rocky. Rocky's not a celebrity. He can't maintain that because it's so new to him. And so he continues to do these jobs, these menial jobs of menial labor and everything like that. Even though, he went the distance, it doesn't mean it's going to be an automatic win in life.
Right, I like seeing him deal with that. I like seeing him deal with his new marriage. I mean, this is the first one. Now, this is going to start a trope that sometimes I enjoy, but by Rocky V will start getting on my nerves. And that's the joke, the trope of Adrian doesn't want him to fight.
Yeah. It's this was a common thread throughout where, I understand where she's coming from.
Right, and this one I totally get it. It's completely believable.
Absolutely. She doesn't want her husband to get hurt. He doesn't need to fight anymore. He went the distance and everything like that, but it's fine. He can calm down. And we as a culture don't really enjoy that because when we see a spouse trying to inhibit the protagonist from doing what we want to see them do, we immediately have dislike for that character.
Right, and I don't want to sound like I just do that here because I think that it comes from a good place of motivation. Talia Shire is a great actress. I really enjoy her in these films, so it's nothing like that. I think part of it too is when I watched these films as a kid, I wanted to get to the fighting, and she was the thing standing in the way.
Right. It very much makes me. This is a loose comparison, but it reminds me of Skyler's character in Breaking Bad, where so many people hated that character, and because they saw her as whiny and just inhibiting, Walter White from doing what he was doing. And I have nothing but sympathy for that character.
She was the wife, right?
Yeah. She was the wife. She was the wife of this kingpin,
right?
Of this drug dealer. And people were like, "Oh, she's annoying." And I was like, "She's just trying to protect her family."
I never found her as annoying as the sister-in-law.
Oh my God, no. That's a new level of annoying. Yeah, but anyway. So, like Rocky One, I feel, as we said before, I see this as a great companion piece. But thankfully, this is not going to be the last time that we see Apollo Creed or even a fight between Apollo Creed and Rocky.
No, it's not. And this is the last time we're going to see them really at major odds together, though, mm-hmm. because when we get to our next film in the series, which is Rocky III from 1982, Apollo takes on a whole new role.
Yes, absolutely. And there's actually, he helps Rocky along. And I love this quote at the end when he's a commentator and, you know, talking about the fight. And some of his fellow, you know, commentators talk to him and say, you know, would you like to be up there? And he's like, if I didn't lose to Rocky, I wouldn't be down here talking to you.
Right.
And I think that's hysterical.
That's something that we didn't really touch on in our synopsis of the other two films. But I really love Carl Weathers in all these films. He's fantastic.
He is amazing. Carl Weathers is a very underrated actor. He kind of became the go-to action guy in the 80s.
He's in Predator, remember?
Yeah, everybody knows him from Predator. He loses an arm, and it's he does a great job in that movie, and he's very much known as Apollo Creed and the guy in Predator. And a lot of people now, this current generation, knows him from Arrested Development, as he plays himself in Arrested Development, and it's a genius parody of himself.
Did he really? I've never seen Arrested Development.
Oh, you are wasting time talking to me right now because you have not seen Arrested Development. It's one of the greatest shows out there.
But not season 4.
Not season 4. No, you can skip season 4. But 1 through 3 are genius, and Carl Weathers, he plays himself. He plays Carl Weathers, but a very different version of himself. Like, the thread of who he is that he's just incredibly cheap. And that's all he talks about. He said he's like, I was on a show with Ann Archer and it was amazing. I never once touched my per diem because I just went to craft services, you know, like I got some veggies, got some soup, bam, I got a stew going. Like, he was just like, that was his industry knowledge, was how to manipulate the film industry to get money.
That's awesome.
And it was, you really need to watch it because he's amazing in it. But he's also amazing in Rocky III because he turns from, he kind of takes the Mickey role, since Mickey's gone now.
Yeah, well, let me just briefly go through it. Rocky III picks up a few, I'm taking it, it's a few years beyond Rocky II at this point, where Rocky II picked up immediately after the first one. This one picks up a few years later. Rocky's still the heavyweight champion of the world, but this time, the fame and fortune of all those years is going to his head, and you know, he's been fighting, he's been getting matches by Mickey that are relatively easy so that he could retain the title and the fame and the glory and all that sort of stuff, but he doesn't know this. So when Mr. T, as Kleber Lang in this film, challenges him, he accepts because he's, you know, crude and makes a few nasty comments about his wife, and ends up getting his ass handed to him in the ring by Mr. T. So he loses the title and loses his confidence. And, you know, and during the match, Mickey also dies. And that's actually a really sad, powerful scene in the film. I think that's Stallone's best moment in this film. But it's up to Apollo Creed, who also watched that fight and noticed that he lost his quote unquote Eye of the Tiger, which is the huge thing of this film, and helps him get his mojo back, so that he can step back into the ring with Mr. T and get his title back, which he does.
Yeah, of course he does. And it's really funny because Eye of the Tiger is, you know, like synonymous with Rocky because of the first movie. It's the go-to.
No, well, I mean, Gonna Fly Now is more synonymous with Rocky, but this is the one that introduces Eye of the Tiger. So now you have two iconic songs.
Excuse me, I got that confused there. Yes, you got that. Yeah, Gonna Fly Now is synonymous in the first one, and then we get another great one in this third one. And it's really funny because when you watch this, it's I can't remember if it's in this one or the next one where there's actually a marching band playing Eye of the Tiger.
It, you know what it is? It is in the fifth one when he's coming back from when he comes back from Russia. That's what's playing when he I think that's what it's playing when he comes back from Russia.
I remember watching that with a few friends, and it was the first time that they saw the fifth one, and he just turns to me, he goes, he's like, the world of Rocky is aware of the Eye of the Tiger song. And it's just, it's kind of a mind bender if you think about it. So don't think about it too hard.
Right.
But what did you think of Rocky III?
I really like this idea because, you know, we spent first two movies with him as the underdog, then he gets this title and all the fame and fortune that comes with it, and when you're not used to it, you can let it go to your head. And you know, they move from their Philadelphia neighborhood, and now they have this huge mansion, and his wife has nice things. I mean, her appearance totally changes. Their appearance totally changes between two and three. The kid, his son is well taken care of, and they let themselves get too comfortable. And I like that story of reminding them where they came from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's he gets soft. He gets comfortable. You nailed it. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And you know, Creed steps in and just helps him out and trains him, and it produces one of the weirdest training montages out of all of the movies.
Well, yes.
Which there was some great training montages in these movies, but this one takes the cake.
Well, it's the most, you know, subtly homoerotic.
Not so subtle in certain times, but yeah, the Rock and Creed running down the beach and just splashing each other with water after they're done.
In short shorts.
In short shorts with these insanely muscular legs. It's, yeah, it is very, very, probably the most homoerotic moment in the show.
But still, I would still argue that 3 is still a legitimately good movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. T plays Mr. T. But he's perfect for this world. He's perfect for this realm.
I mean, don't you love that? Do you have any prediction for this fight? Pain.
he looks at the camera. Pain. And yeah, there's so many great moments like that in this third one. And I also think that this probably has the most iconic ending outside of the first one.
Yes, because the ending is not the match in this one. You get a little post-tag scene of Rocky and Apollo's private rematch, which when we get to Creed is going to be referenced again. Did you notice that when you watched
it? Yeah. Oh, of course I noticed that. That was amazing. That was a big moment, like, you know, in Creed when Creed go, like, the young Creed goes up to Rock and says, like, I heard there was a third fight, who won? And Rock's like, how do you know about this? It was perfect. It was a great way of an in. And this one is so funny because, you know, like, he's like, you want to ring the bell? It's like, ding, ding. And then, boom, one punch, and I have the tag. Perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. I love that movie. It's a great film. Yeah.
Great movie, great film. Then we move on to 4, Rocky 4, 1985. So a little bit, just one more year's worth of distance between sequels. And this one has a kind of a, I think this has great iconic moments, but this one, am I speaking out of turn when I say that this wasn't as well received as the first three?
No, it was not well received as the first three. And
okay.
You know, I think that looking back on it, it's a very much a dated film, because this is the one where a Soviet boxer played by Dolph Lundgren comes over
if he dies.
to the United States to look for boxing matches. And you know, this is right in the middle of the Cold War, so it's mm-hmm. it's a very Cold War rah-rah America film. But Apollo Creed challenges him because of his ego, except that a combination of his ego and Rocky's reluctance to stop the fight, even though when he's clearly losing, gets Creed killed.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocky feels very responsible for it, so he himself challenges Drago to a fight in Russia. And it's, you know what, I gotta say, I know it's not as good a film as the first three, but you know what, I stick this film squarely in guilty pleasure territory for me.
I think that's where it starts to go, because, like, by the time Rocky IV comes out, it's the dead center of the 80s, and this is a very 80s film.
Yes.
You know, with 1982, we still had some distance from the 80s. Like, the 80s wasn't in full swing. And this one is, you can, just from the music, the shot selection, the acting, this montage is probably one, like not homoerotic like in the third one, but this one is a very symbolic montage of, you know, like, Rock out in the wilderness.
Oh,
you know,
the Hearts on Fire montage?
Yeah, the Hearts on Fire montage, where he's chopping wood, he's climbing mountains, and then you have, you know, Dolph Lundgren, who is, you know, he uses science and, you know, machines and steroids, and he's clearly, you know, like, not playing by the rules, and it's just like, who's going to win, the homegrown or the developed in a lab champion, you know?
Right.
And it's, you know, it's very much, like you said, an aspect of the Cold War. And there's so many moments that you can parody.
I mean, it's easy to parody this movie. It's really easy. I mean, and by the way, is there any movie with a more 80s soundtrack than this one? I don't think so.
The Breakfast Club. Maybe that's it.
Maybe, but I've never heard so much synthesizer in my life.
Hearts on fire.
I love every second of that cheesy song, but it is very, very 80s. But you know what? I enjoy it just because. What were you gonna ask?
Oh, what did you think of the Rock's speech at the end?
It's kind of hilarious. If I could change, you can change. Everybody can change. Changes for the world. And the fact that they, you know, everybody in Russia starts cheering for him over Drago and is not immediately going to be put to death is kind of funny. even they have like a Gorbachev figure at the fight, if I'm not mistaken. Like they have a stand-in for Gorbachev.
It was very much like, you know, bring down this wall, you know, like even though we're in a different country, it was, you know, like it was that kind of a speech.
It was. And I mean, this one just has great parody. Like you said, if he dies, he dies. And during the right before the second fight, it's I must break you. And of course, the one thing I do remember from this film, and it's such a minor subplot, but it was so bizarre and out of left field, is the robot with the happy birthday, Polly.
I was so hoping that you would talk about the robot. Speaking of 80s culture, there's a freaking robot in a Rocky film, and it's like a big set piece, like moment where like there's like, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like backlit.
Yeah,
it was his birthday. It's backlit. I want to say that there's smoke, but there probably wasn't.
No, there kind of was.
It comes out of the doorway, and this music just swells. It's like, and it's just, and Rock is loving it. Like he's just all over Polly, just going like, "Oh my god!"
Meanwhile, Polly, played by Burt Young, has this look on his face that the rest of the audience must have at that point.
I know.
But what I like,
definite about, low point of the series.
But what I like about it too is that he takes that thing and reprograms it to be a sexy female voice. And Polly is such a perv.
So wrong in so many ways.
But you know what? Not as wrong as the next film, which is, I have to say, I think it's the only film in the franchise that I didn't like and still
have.
That's
the thing. Yeah, Rocky V came out in 1990. This is the worst film. There's so little about this film that's enjoyable. And even though Rocky IV was incredibly cheesy and over the top and campy, it was still fun to watch. And Rocky V, yeah, there were no enjoyable elements in that. The only thing that I liked was at the very beginning of the movie. So it takes place right after Rocky IV. I mean, the second after Rocky IV. And Rocky is, there's something clearly wrong with Rock. And Adrian is worried, and then he's diagnosed with brain damage, and he's forced to retire. I love that storyline because it shows the aftermath of what this kind of lifestyle can lead to.
Yeah, but then they introduce the whole, you know, Polly did some screwed up insider trading stuff, so they lose all their fortune and they're forced to go back to the old neighborhood. They're trying to make it like the first one, because this is the first one where the director of the first one came back for this one.
Yeah.
And the way that they try to cram the story back into that mentality of going back to the old neighborhood and doing all that stuff, it just made it no fun to watch. Because you feel
they
like
could have done it.
Because you feel like you're taking a giant step backward.
Oh, it was a giant step backward. It was not moving forward with the franchise. It was trying to build off a nostalgia of the old neighborhood, but we're out of the old neighborhood. That's part of the victory, that he made it out. And there was several different ways that they could have come back to the neighborhood in some fashion, where like maybe a family member is sick and he has to come by and take care of him. And so he gets reacquainted with the neighborhood and realizes that he's out of touch with his roots. And you don't have to destroy their lifestyle. You don't have to destroy their success. It felt like a personal slight when I watched it.
And it just felt like it was like there for reasons of plot no other reason.
And how are you still associated with Polly after he does this to the family? He robbed your son of his birthright, and you're still like, "Oh, Polly, ha ha."
Yeah, I mean, like they they do the character of Polly no favors in this one. And you know what? This is the film where, like, I finally started breaking on Adrian, because they really make her, they take her, he's not, her not, he's not going to fight trope and stretch it way, way beyond the point of it being any kind of entertaining.
Which is sad, because this is the movie where she has the most reason to stop him from fighting, but yet it's played very annoyingly.
It's played very shrilly, and I don't know if that was just because, you know, it wasn't a good script, or if it was just the fifth movie in, and we're, you know, anytime you reach a fifth movie of something, some of the actors might be getting tired of it. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But the movie...
Do you want to talk about it? Give a quick summary.
I mean, the quick summary is, after he comes back from Russia, he's diagnosed with brain damage, like you said, so he stops fighting. But Polly does some weird stuff with their accounts, and all of a sudden they go bankrupt, so they have to... He has to either fight or declare bankruptcy and give up all the mansion and stuff like that and go back to the old neighborhood, which is ultimately the route that he chooses because of Adrian. Right. So they go back to the old neighborhood, and he starts training at Mixol Gym. So he starts gaining a new protege in the form of, I think his name is Tommy the Machine Gun, which is like the weirdest nickname I've ever heard. But
yeah, it's played by a real fighter called Tommy Morrison.
Yeah. Yeah, I did know that. So he gains this new protege and starts paying more attention to him than he does his son, who's actually played by Stallone's real life son in this film.
Right.
But and so that ticks him off. But then the fame goes to Tommy's head, and he starts pairing with this Don King knockoff,
George Washington Duke,
who you just want to like punch in the face the whole film. And it leads to not even a boxing match. It's a street brawl that ends this film, which is like really disappointing.
This was a disappointing movie all around, and Tommy Morrison has no business acting, because that was not acting. That was barely reading. It was a horrible, horrible performance, and it really lowered the series. And it's no wonder that everyone thought that was going to be the last movie, because after everyone saw it, they're like, oh, God. You know, like you, before we started recording the show, you started calling me a fickle fan. And I said, no, I'm not a fickle fan. I just know what I like. And I don't like series fatigue or film fatigue.
Right.
And if we could have saved the world from Rocky V by not having it, I feel like most of everybody would have had that response.
But even though there was like a cheesy aspect to 4, there was no reason at the time to believe that we shouldn't have a 5, at least in my opinion. Like, it wasn't like 4 was so irredeemably bad in my eyes that a fifth one wasn't justified.
But thankfully, that wasn't the end, even though all of us thought it was, for 16 years.
For 16 years.
Well,
that's, I mean,
insane.
It was the first one to not open at number one. I don't think it made its money back. It, you know, something funny, it lost on its opening weekend to Home Alone.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it stayed silent for 16 years.
Oh, actually it did okay in the box office. I'm just looking up the numbers right now. It had a $42 million budget and made back $120 million.
Okay, so it did okay, but not.
So back then it's okay, yeah.
But
not for a Rocky film.
And certainly not, the reviews were not okay.
Oh my God, no.
So 16-year break, and then just when you think it's not going to happen, we get a Rocky VI in the form of Rocky Balboa, the film.
Now, there are people who didn't like this movie.
Those people are wrong.
I don't understand those people. This movie was amazing.
I think so, too.
This is my second favorite film.
I think it's people who are grumpy that, Stallone's old now, he shouldn't be doing this kind of film, it's just for his vanity. And maybe it is, but at least if there were no more Rocky movies after Rocky Balboa, it's like, thank God, at least we have a good ending this time.
Right, right. Yes, this was a definitely redeemed the franchise. And obviously, if they did it, like, doing it today would have been radically different from doing it 10 years ago. Because 10 years is a long time in a man's life, and definitely in a man's physique. And if you look at Stallone in Rocky Balboa, he's even bigger than when he was in Rocky 1 through 5.
Right. And
it's insane. Now, I'm sure he had some help.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But, you know, regardless, what I like about this film and kind of the synopsis is, you know, it picks up much later after Rocky V. He now owns a restaurant that's named after Adrian because she has passed away in the interim.
This because Tully Shire said no.
No. That's totally misinformation. Talia Shire was going to come back for this film, but in the course of writing the story, Stallone kind of consulted with her, and he said, you know, where Rocky is in this film, I think it would do his character a greater service if he no longer had Adrian by his side, and she agreed.
I heard differently, but that sounds much nicer.
No, well, that's what I'm reading off of the behind the scenes information, is that it was a mutual agreement, and Shire walked away with no hard feelings.
That's nice.
So she's not in this film. Adrian is dead.
I do think that was the right decision, though.
It is the right decision, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, he's kind of put his boxing days behind him until, and it's kind of weird that they bring this in, but it's interesting because the current heavyweight champion of the world is this Mason the Lion Dixon. And they because it's 2006 and we're obsessed with computers at this point, they have this video game simulation that shows Rocky in his prime versus Dixon in his prime, and the simulation suggests that Rocky would win.
Mm-hmm.
That pisses Dixon off, and much like Apollo Creed with his runaway ego in Rocky II especially,
very similar.
Dixon challenges Rocky now to a fight, and after some reluctance, he accepts, and very much like the first film, ends up going the distance when no one else thinks he can, but this time it's due to age. He doesn't win ultimately, but he it's another victory like the first film.
Did you ever watch the alternate ending to this movie where he actually did win?
No, I did not. I didn't even know there was an alternate ending.
Yeah, there's an alternate ending where he actually won, and it's very interesting how they play it, because the Dixon at the end, when he's getting interviewed, you know, he's totally cool with it. Like, it's really surprising, like the way that they have him approach it. He, you know, it says he's like, I always knew that this was a possibility, and, you know, it doesn't matter that I got an injury, because sometimes, you know, that happens. You got to play through the pain or something like that. And it ends very similarly. Like, the tone is very similar, except he has a technical win. And yes, if you can find the ending, go watch it, because it's very interesting. But I'm very glad that the theatrical release had the ending that was much more like the first one. This felt like very much a bookend to the series.
And so let's talk about this real quickly before we move on to the new film, which I definitely want to hit on before we wrap up.
Absolutely.
I think, however it happened, and I want to choose to believe it was the more amiable route that I told you. However it happened, I'm not happy that Adrian's not in this film, because even though I was getting annoyed with her in Five, I do think she's a vital part of the series, but the fact that she's passed away in the interim and what it does for Rocky as a character in this film and the next one is so powerful, and they work with it so well that her not being in this film totally works. And I made this comment on our last episode when we were talking about great screen couples. In this film and the next one, she's not physically present, but she's in the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely accurate. She is in this movie. Her spirit is in this movie. And I think this was an incredibly smart move, because it affects him so deeply, and it's so believable in how he reacts, because not everybody would react this way, but you believe that Rock would. And I just love the little touches in this movie about how, like, there's a foldable chair in a tree that's his, and he keeps it there because he comes to her gravesite so much.
Right, to the annoyance of Polly, who is still kicking in this movie, and this is going to be his last hurrah, but, you know, they got his characterization back to what I liked about him versus what he was in Five, you know? Mm-hmm. And everything just kind of clicked. It was a wonderful 30th anniversary special, because that came out in 2006. It was 30 years after the first one. And it was like, you know what? If we have no more movies after this one, I'm fine, because this is a much better ending.
This one had one of the greatest speeches in all of the Rocky movies, and maybe even in all of motivational movies like this.
Are you talking about the one to his son?
Yeah, the speech to his son. You know, like, it has that line that I just resonates with me, and I think the rest of the world, where it's not about how hard you can hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And that was a theme that they carried out in the movie. And when he's in the ring, and he you think he's going to go down, and like the world's swirling around him, the audio gets a little weird and muted, and you hear him in his own mind say that to himself, and then all of a sudden you hear the like he said, he's like, you got to keep moving forward. And right. Then ding, and you hear the music start to swell again. You're just like, oh man, I'm getting chills now talking about it. It's just such a powerful moment. Such a great movie.
It is a great movie. And you know what, we again pretty much thought that was going to be the last of it, because it was such a great bookend. But lo and behold, 9 years later, this movie Creed comes out into theaters. Mm-hmm. And the premise of it is Apollo Creed's illegitimate son.
That's right.
Has always been a fighter his whole life, is interested in doing boxing more as a professional thing, and because he's well aware of who his father is, goes to Philadelphia to seek out Rocky Balboa to train him. Now this is kind of a sequel / spinoff, if you will.
Yeah.
And of all the movies, this has the greatest potential to not work if it's not done right. No one was really sure of the quality of this film when it was coming out. And, you know, everyone kind of waited to see what would happen. But I will say this. I do love Rocky Balboa, the film, as much as you do. Mm-hmm. I honestly think, though, that Creed, the way it turned out, is probably my second favorite of the series, next to the first one.
I was very much like the rest of the world, where I did not see this being a good movie. Like, even though I love the Rocky franchise, I didn't have that much interest in seeing that, because I loved Rocky Balboa so much. I was like, no, that's the end. I don't need this. I don't need this film, this spinoff, this sequel, whatever. But when I actually did watch it, I was very surprised, like the rest of the world, where I was like, wow, this is a quality movie. You know, are there times that are ridiculous? Are there times that are over the top? Absolutely. But the rest of the film is so powerful and so well crafted that you can forgive those moments. And I'm glad that they didn't call this Rocky 7 or like Rocky whatever. I'm glad that they put Creed's name in it, because it's a great beginning to a new series. And this was very much a passing of the torch movie. And probably one of the best passing of the torch movies ever.
I think I have to think really hard, because I think that there's not too many passing the torch movies that come close to this one. The cast, I think, is fantastic. I really, really like Michael B. Jordan as Adonis Creed. I think he's a great up and coming actor. He's been in some duds here and there, but he's never been the weak point of any of those right. films. And I think he does a fantastic dramatic role here. But and I don't want to take anything away from him, because he is the title character of this film. But there's something about, after 7 films, the way that Stallone plays Rocky in this film, mm-hmm. that just – I didn't think that he could, like, take my breath away with a performance, because he – you know, in the interim years between Rocky Balboa and this film, he's kind of fallen back into his 80s tropes with Expendables and all that. All that, you know, 80s action kind of garbage, guilty pleasure stuff. But to see him come back to this role and perform it the way that he does in this film. And even though this is Creed's story, they give Rocky quite a significant amount of plot in this film.
Yeah, very much so. Like, this movie, it was... I had a very open mind when I watched this movie, because so many people enjoyed it. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I'm going to give this a chance. I'm going to, you know, give it a wide berth. And I wasn't really on board at first. I was just kind of like, yeah, this is a little slow, whatever. But then as soon as Rock was reintroduced, I was like, boom, okay, you have me. This is going to be a good time.
And it is very much a continuation of the last film, because he's still at the restaurant. It's still Adrian's. It's still the same set. He is still visiting his wife, you know, with the chair and the tree. They called back to that, except that, you know, Polly has passed away in the interim, so he's visiting both of them. and his son's away, so they really make Rocky feel alone in this film.
Yes, very isolated.
Which is great, because it brings so much drama. And then when they introduce the cancer subplot, which could be unnecessary in so many other films, the way that it impacts Rocky's character, and really kind of the way it impacts Creed's character, I think is done so well and so non-cliche or cheesy that it really works for me. I've never been more impressed with Stallone in a long time than I have been in this film.
This was a mind-blowing performance, and he absolutely 100% deserved the Oscar for this. And, you know, Rylance is a great actor, but Bridge of Spies was just okay.
Yeah.
And this movie was phenomenal compared to Bridge of Spies.
Although, did you see the internet meme on online after the Oscar came out? And it kind of made me laugh and kind of appreciate this. It's like, it's very fitting that Stallone went the distance from this film and still didn't win.
No, I hadn't seen that. Oh, man, that's tragically funny.
But you know what? He deserved that Oscar. But you know what? I'm still going to remember this performance regardless, because I think, honest to God, I think that next to the first film, this is his best performance as Rocky Balboa. I really do think so.
I am really, really interested to see Ryan Coogler's career grow.
Well, it's already growing because of the impact of this film, and he's the one who did... I haven't seen it, but now I want to. Did you ever see Fruitvale Station?
No, I haven't.
It's also with Michael B. Jordan, and it was his first... It was one of Ryan Coogler's first theatrical releases, I believe. But because of that film and because of this film, he's now going to be the mind behind Marvel's Black Panther film. Which I'm very excited for, because look at how well he was able to present an African American protagonist for the world to get on board with in this film. I think he can do the same for Black Panther.
I completely forgot that he was going to direct Black Panther, and I'm even more excited for the movie. And I was already excited for the movie. Coogler is only a couple months older than I am, and I am so looking forward to his career. I'm so looking forward to seeing what he can do, because this movie, one of the greatest aspects of the movie, not just the story, which he was, you know, which he wrote, was the directing. It was such a solid piece.
Yeah,
it was well directed.
I mean, everyone kind of talked about it at this point, but did you love during Creed's first fight in the film with Rocky by his side, how it was one continuous shot just on the two fighters with no cuts in between?
I am a sucker for the long shot with no cuts, you know, like whether it's Children of Men, Birdman. I'm a sucker for long, continuous Steadicam shots. Love him. And I was very, very much impressed with this piece.
So I think Ryan Coogler's going places. I think Michael B. Jordan is going places. And, you know, for a film that could have easily fell on its face, it's astounding that it turned out as well as it did.
Now, at an award show, I can't remember, like an interviewer asked Stallone, you know, like, would you be interested in a Creed sequel? And Stallone, I think, gave a response that I thought was pretty accurate with my own views and interpretations. He said, this was a very nice exit for Rocky. And he says, he's like, I don't see myself topping that exit. And so he was a little wary of doing a sequel. And I'm kind of with him. I don't know. Here's the thing. I have a duality about this, is that I feel like this was such a great exit for Stallone that this should be his last film as Rock. But at the same time, I don't know if I want to see Creed 2 without Rocky.
Right. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, to be sure. I think he'll be open to it. It depends on the script. Now, keep in mind, he initially didn't want to do this project. And it was only by meeting Ryan Coogler, talking about the script, and him seeing Fruitvale Station that changed his mind.
And
decided to give this guy a shot, and thank God that he did. But it's a weird thing, because I there is going to be a sequel to this. I think it's already been announced in talks, but you know, it'll be weird to see where it goes, because the there was a lot of parallels in Creed to the first Rocky movie, and which is fine, because I think that it, you know, it's a passing of the torch film. It's another legacy sequel, which I enjoy very much. But, you know, the temptation being going forward is, you know, how do you make Creed 2 not like Rocky 2?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be rough. I'm interested to see where it's going. I'm not saying I don't want it, but I am very interested to see what they do with it.
But I'm very happy with how this one turned out, and what a great way to end our retrospective. If you have not seen Creed yet, it is now out on digital media. It's out on Blu-ray, DVD. Pick it up. If you're a fan of the series, it's probably one of the best. I think I rank it number 2, right behind the first one.
So do you want to give our ranks real quick?
I haven't thought about it that much, but I know for the fact that the first one's obviously the classic, so it stays at number 1. I'm going to go Creed is at number 2. Then I'd probably put Rocky Balboa right underneath Creed. Mm-hmm. And then I'll probably go 2, 3, 4, even though I really like 4, but I recognize the dip in quality. And then 5, absolutely last.
I'd probably go, you know, 1, then Balboa, then Rocky 2, then Creed, and then 3, 4, 5. That's probably how I would go.
Right. But I think we've enjoyed, I think the point is we kind of enjoyed all of them except 5.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. It's like, whatever it is, 5 is the worst. Well, I think that's a great way to end our retrospective. I was so glad that Creed was such a great high note for the series, and I'm interested to see what happens in the future. You can find us at thenerdparty.com. That's where you can go for all your Nerd Party needs. You can find all the episodes from the Senate floor there, Nerd Nuptial, as well as Aggressive Negotiations. And you can find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin. And please, 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 if you're listening to our voice, we have very loyal listener fan base, and we have good numbers. And so if you're listening to my voice, please go to iTunes.com and write us a review. We would love to hear from you guys. And it's so easy. You can do it straight from your phone. It's so simple. It takes 30 seconds. We would appreciate it. And if you give us, you can give us whatever review you want, but if you give us 5 stars, we will mention you on the podcast. And we thank you to those who have done it before. Matt, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me personally at mhansen0207, H-A-N-S-E-N. So thank you so much for listening to our special Rocky retrospective here on the Senate floor. Now, Tristan, to take us out, you want to ring the bell?
Ding, ding.